Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Rectal polyps are more pleasant and generally a better thing than the year 2020, which, as many of you know, is the worst year ever, and that is also the name of the podcast that I just introduced.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, we almost called this show worse than rectal polyps.
Yeah.
Glad we didn't.
We really dodged a rectal polyp with that one.
Mm-hmm. Side note, now that TeePublic is selling masks, our worst year ever masks look very, very nice.
Yeah.
Oh,
we are officially grifting off the Rona, so reward us for this shameless behavior by
purchasing
a mask.
Not sure how I feel about that, but...
I mean, it's cool because for every non-medical mask sold, TeePublic will donate one medical-grade mask to Direct Relief, which
is
cool.
But
They sold out really fast, but I guess there'll be more in stock.
Why are they hoarding medical-grade masks hostage? They should just give those away for free. Anyway, that's not something I should say to our audience.
I would say more, but I have been stealing a medical-grade mask from a doctor's hands for every one of these masks we've sold, so I should probably just step out at
and
this point.
And Dan'll clean this up to whatever's appropriate. Yeah.
No, this is all appropriate.
Nope.
So this week we decided it was time to do a bit of an election update. You know, hard to believe there's an election going on, but there is. Yep.
That's still happening. There is. That's
time.
Still happening.
To remember that.
So we're going to, you know, honor the original vision of this show, which was to discuss the election today by discussing the election.
Woo! Everyone's favorite topic.
Lots of stuff to cover.
We have to vote in November. Jesus Christ.
We have to vote in November. And I wanted to start by talking about that a bit, specifically about voting by mail. So yesterday, Nancy Pelosi vowed to proof the general election by ensuring that everyone can vote by mail. So let's talk about that really quick because it's
generally
incredibly important.
Good call. Thanks.
Generally,
Bandana queen, Nancy Pelosi.
I mean, she has got a whole array of scarves
more
ready
like
to go for this.
Nancy Pelosi Antifa, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, snap.
It is more like that.
I don't love her politics, but I do love her collection of neck scarves. Most of you are probably aware that Democrats have been fighting to include funding for vote by mail in the upcoming election in the next stimulus package, you know, to avoid an unmitigated disaster in November, like the situation we saw in Wisconsin in early April. In case you need a quick refresher, Democrats and the state's Democratic governor pushed to delay Wisconsin's primary. But then Republicans overruled that, forcing people to choose between doing their Democratic duty and obeying the law and protecting their families by sheltering in place. Why am I so hard for me today?
It's okay. It's hard for everybody because there's a horrible outbreak that's changing life in terrible fundamental ways, and the people in charge of responding to it are incompetent at best and actively malicious at worst. And Yeah.
That is news to me. What? Hold on, I'm going to Google current events.
Yeah, Google incompetent at best and actively malicious at worst.
Yeah.
And several photographs will come up, and they will all be of Nancy Pelosi hybridized with Donald Trump through some sort of horrific algorithm that forms them into one collective monster that simultaneously forces people to vote in elections, except for elections in which somebody supporting Medicare for all could win, and also simultaneously attempts to restrict, and I don't know. It's fucking, I hate all these people so much.
Noted.
That's fair, but upon Googling that phrase, the first hit is a Reddit post called Reddit's Head of Network Security.
That's also probably accurate, yeah.
Anyway, thank you for that. My point is that public health and safety shouldn't be a partisan issue, but apparently it is. Interesting, since we just were mentioning Wisconsin, as of this week, Already 40 cases of coronavirus have been linked to the Wisconsin primary.
Wow.
Wowee.
Look, requiring that people show up to vote in person, honestly, anytime, but especially during a pandemic, is voter disenfranchisement. It disproportionately affects poorer people, people of color, and that is even more impacted during a crisis like this. But unfortunately, Donald Trump, the White House, his allies, Republicans, are continually attacking the proposal to expand mail-in balloting, despite Trump himself using a mail-in ballot in the Florida primary, you know. They're arguing that it is vulnerable to fraud. And Trump even openly admitted on Fox News that it would probably hurt their party's chances in November if we had vote by mail. He said, quote, you'd never have a Republican elected in this country again. Also, at a recent press conference, he said, mail ballots are a very dangerous thing for this country because they're cheaters. They go and collect them. They're fraudulent in many cases. So is that true? No, it's not.
Thank you for your report, Katie. Yeah.
In conclusion, you are wrong. This is an excerpt from a Reuters article. Quote, a series of academic, government, and news investigations over the years have found little evidence of election fraud of any kind. Utah and four other states that vote entirely by mail, Hawaii, Oregon, Washington, and Colorado, have reported little fraud. Trump, who has often said without evidence that millions voted illegally in 2016, formed a commission after the campaign to investigate. It disbanded in January 2018 without finding any evidence to back his allegations. Election experts say there have been scattered incidences of people collecting and manipulating absentee ballots in a process called ballot harvesting. The most recent example came in a 2018 North Carolina congressional race, the outcome of which was overturned when it was determined an operative gathered ballots for the Republican candidate.
Oh, no way.
What?
Just to summarize, it's not a thing, but the only time it's been a thing, it's been a Republican thing.
What?
As I just mentioned, five states already vote entirely by mail. Since this crisis started, more than a dozen states have postponed their primaries and expanded vote by mail for their citizens. New York State just canceled their primary. We're going to talk about that a little bit later, I believe. 28 more states are now allowing people to request vote by mail ballots without needing an excuse like they have in the past. What's interesting is that today, the day that we're recording this, Tuesday, is when the Ohio primary is taking place. Ohio was one of the first states to postpone their primary back in March to buy themselves time and give everybody a mail-in ballot who wants one. So all eyes are kind of on that primary right now to see how it plays out, to see how the mail-in balloting works for them. So far, we've been hearing a lot of mixed reports. Some people have requested a ballot and got it right away. Others requested several times without it showing up. In this situation, anyone who does not have a ballot in the mail can also cast their ballot in person, just not at a traditional polling place because those are closed, but at local boards of elections. And it's pretty much expected that people are going to be standing around in long lines to do that. That is to say, the Ohio turnout will almost certainly be down. Part of the problem is the disorganization and the chaos that's happening right now. People needed to have their ballots already weeks ago so that they could mail it back in time. And right now we're also experiencing postal service delays. And so there's a lot of uncertainty, and it makes people feel like they can wonder if they can even trust that their voices are getting heard, that their ballots are being counted. So that's going to be interesting to see how today plays out. But this is all very important because I say this, I mentioned that it's great that Ohio's made these steps and we're going to see what happens. But if we are going to have mail-in ballots and the infrastructure there for the November election, we need to get that approved and started now. The delays that are happening and all of this chaos and confusion cannot be a factor come November. And we're still looking at 17 states that will need to change their policies immediately in order to guarantee that. And those states are the ones that are experiencing very fierce political battles. For example, New Mexico County clerks petitioned the state Supreme Court to allow their June primary to be vote by mail, but state Republicans are then suing to stop that. And it's just all, it's incredibly frustrating. It's just kind of a big fucking mess. And it's going to be expensive. Again, this is why Democrats are fighting to have it included in the stimulus packages. And that itself is becoming a partisan battle, you know, saying Democrats are standing in the way of getting people their relief money. But if we are going to have vote by mail, it's going to be billions of dollars, you know, millions just on postage, let alone the printing of, you know, pamphlets, the actual ballots, you know what I mean? So it's just a huge thing to coordinate at this late stage.
Cool.
You think we'll be able to do it?
And the other thing that's important to note is that Americans overwhelmingly want the option of mail-in voting. Apparently, this is from NBC, a new poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research finds Democrats are now much more likely than Republicans to support their state conducting elections exclusively by mail. The poll finds that 39% of Americans favor conducting all mail elections, up from 19% in 2018, and another 40% are opposed. But even more, 48% favor a move to voting by mail if the coronavirus outbreak is ongoing in November. The poll also shows 60% of Americans support allowing people to vote via absentee ballot without requiring them to give a reason if the outbreak is still happening. So basically,
yeah,
overall approval for mail-in balloting has gone up a lot, but especially now that the coronavirus is happening, this seems like a pretty obvious thing that we should be working towards implementing.
Seems like it. Yeah, this seems. I mean, this is another one of those things that is true and has been needed, and the current situation is really, really, really highlighting that.
And it's difficult because we have the way our government works is that states make decisions on an individual level. So, and there's a lot of reasons for that, but it's very difficult in a time like this to make an overarching decision that affects everybody. You know what I mean?
Mm. You know.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I like this. How this show is often a bunch of details about what's going on and what's possible, what we can and can't do, and then just like.
But
the dumbest things going
to
happen.
Just a long sigh.
Yeah, in Oregon, you just get mailed a ballot and you mail the ballot back, and that's how all voting is done in Oregon, and it's fine.
So do they not have the option? Do you not have the option of going to a poll? It's all mail-in, or can you drop it off on the day somewhere?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think you get it a couple of weeks ahead of time. I don't know if there's actual, like, there probably are. I
think you can drop it off on the day. I'm pretty sure they have, like, drop-off sites,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they've got to have polling locations. Yes, I'm seeing that they have polling locations. They have drop boxes and stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah,
so
they just
for
mail
me,
you shit.
I've never done a mail-in ballot. I've appreciated having the opportunity to because I like to physically go down in person. I like to get my sticker. I like to know for sure that I'm seeing it going into the machine. And so I'm coming from that perspective. I also desperately do not want to have to show up to a poll in November. I want to have faith that we've worked out the kinks and that me mailing in my ballot means that it will get counted. I want to make sure that I have my ballot, you know? And I'm lucky I live in California, so I will have that option. But for other people, it's terrifying. And again, we're looking at Wisconsin. People, already 40 that they know of linked to the primary, 40 new cases. And you know it's much more than that.
Right. Yes. Yeah, because all those people have spread it to other people.
Yeah.
Statistically, about two other people each, somewhere around there. Maybe more. And it's,
a lot of
yeah,
don't know they have it. Yeah.
It's incredibly irresponsible. And I'm just looking it up a little bit right now. Yeah. One of the things, like when you move to Oregon and you register for a driver's license, you're automatically registered to vote. Voting is done by mail. There's drop off locations. And it's just like, you know, when I moved to Oregon, I just immediately started getting and registered for a license, I just immediately started getting ballots for like right. voting and stuff. And it was just always as simple as you check your vote off, you put it back in the mail, you're good mm-hmm. to go. Very simple. No reason every state can't do the same thing, other than it would be very bad for Republicans.
There you go. See, I was going to say, there are reasons.
So I guess my advice in conclusion of this section is call your representatives, especially if you live in conservative states, which always seems like a very futile action, but it's something that we can do and maybe it will make a difference.
Yeah. You know, it's frustrating because this is one of the many, a number of things that would like, if we had done the reasonable thing like Oregon did nationwide and had a vote by mail system nationwide years ago, the one thing we wouldn't be worrying about right now is how to take care of the election. Everyone would just say, well, okay, but this doesn't have to change at all because we all just still, everyone can mail a thing. You know, we'll have to make sure that the post office, maybe we'll stop it from them from delivering, you know, Amazon packages that aren't food or whatever for 5 or 6 days to make sure that they can like handle the load. But like, it wouldn't really require, there would be plenty of time this hitting in yeah. March for them to figure out a solution to it.
Yeah.
And it would be one fucking thing that we don't have to worry about this year. But instead, it's going to be a stupid shit show that is differently stupid in every single state. And I just hate it. Like,
yeah.
It was guaranteed this election was going to be not as smooth as other elections when the coronavirus hit. That's understandable. No government yes. could possibly handle a major national election perfectly when a massive surprise, unprecedented epidemic hits. It was going to cause some friction, right? But it didn't need to be as dumb as it's going to be.
Nope.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, sure it did. We hate voting. every single election we have, the reaction is, wow, we haven't figured out voting yet. We need to fix our elections. We need to do this better. And it never happens.
Never
we
do.
Just do it again. This country, from what I can gather, one of the things it was built on was the idea of voting, and we still have not figured it out.
No, why would we?
One could suggest that that's by design, but hey, who knows? Maybe it's just really, really hard to figure out the thing that Oregon figured out.
Yeah, maybe the only smart state is Oregon, the state that lets you buy as many high explosives as you want and doesn't fund its schools. Oregon, the perfect state.
The perfect state.
Let's all look to Oregon.
We got it all figured out.
Mm-hmm. You can vote by mail, your kids won't learn shit, and our food banks are out of food. Oregon!
All right, we're going to take a real quick break for, mm-hmm. you know, ads.
And speaking of a break, you know what isn't broken in these virus-filled times?
What?
The fine wire-guided laser missile products that Raytheon programs.
I couldn't guess that.
Cody, you were telling me the other day that you had a wedding in Afghanistan that you really wanted to bomb. And Katie, if I'm not mistaken, you had someone who needed a missile made out of knives launched at their car. What if I were to tell you that Raytheon can solve both of your needs in one easy one-stop shop setting?
It'd be the best news I've had all day.
Well,
come on.
Pop on over to Raytheon.com and listen to these ads.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
And we're back from those ads.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
I'm here Raytheon.com.
To talk about Joe Biden, the Joe Abides.
Can we go back to ads?
Yeah, I wish. Now, we're going to talk about the sexual, very credible sexual assault allegations. Again, we've already dedicated a lot of time. We will continue to do that to them at the end of this episode. I am not going to talk much about this here. What we're going to talk about next has really nothing to do with Joe Biden's moral character, with whether or not you should vote for him, with whether or not he is a monster or a decent person. We're going to talk purely about how is he actually faring in the polls? How does it look like he's actually going to do against Trump based on this moment in time and how the coronavirus has affected the election? And it is unfortunate, but it is a fact that the question of whether or not Joe Biden can get elected probably has nothing to do with whether or not he's a rapist, because America has proven repeatedly that they will vote for rapists. So we will talk about that at the end, but it really, there's a good chance that even if Joe Biden comes out and says, yeah, I did it, it will have no impact on his electability. So, the most basic question I had kind of going into my research for this segment was, can Joe Biden actually win an election against Donald Trump based on sort of the information we have right now? And if we care about trying to have accurate answers to that question in advance of the election, we have to start by asking the question, is there even any point in paying attention to polls right now? Now, I've been very critical about Nate Silver, and I think when we did our episode about like who you can and cannot trust, we maybe could have phrased that better, because people like took it as we were saying, never listen to any of these people. And that's not what I was saying. No. I think our issue with most of them, with Tapper and with Nate Silver and the others we talked, is that they often exceed their depth. Nate Silver is a decent person to rely on when he is analyzing how other people conduct polls, because he spent a lot of time thinking about that, and he's made some good points and been right about some important things in the past. And one of the things he was right about is he took a lot of shit before the 2016 election for giving Trump a very realistic path to victory and laying out, in fact, the path that wound up happening. So I do, as critical as I am of old Nate, I do listen to what he says about the quality of polls and what we can tell from polls in the past. And one of the problems with trying to analyze current polls based on polls in the past is that there haven't been a whole fuckload of presidential elections, and there have really been like two that have occurred during massive sweeping plagues. So we just don't have much good, like it's
the
very
data
hard.
Isn't there.
The data on how good the data is isn't there.
Right.
There are some people, including MIT researcher Alexander Adugjanian and economist data journalist G. Elliot Morris, who will argue that early polls in recent elections have been closer to the final outcome of that election than early polls in previous cycles. And thus, polls at this point in the election are very important to pay attention to. But there are other political scientists who study polls who will maintain that while early election polls are more accurate, they're still not nearly as accurate as late election polls. And the degree of shift that they have is significant enough that they're not super worth paying attention to at this point. So there's a lot of debate, even among poll analysts, about this. And I'm going to read a quote from a 538 article about sort of this situation now. So to better understand just how meaningful early general election polling is, we did our own analysis, collecting all the national surveys we could find from 1980 to 2016, spanning from 200 days before the presidential election to the day before. Then we created a rolling 7-day polling average of the margin between the Democratic and Republican nominees, as that allowed us to calculate just how far off the polls were from the final election day vote share margin on any given day. And what they found is that in the last three presidential elections, this kind of varied depending on who won. So in 2016, the polls from 6 months before the general election were 2 points more Democratic than the final national popular vote margin on average. And even though that's not huge, the size of the error was enough that it kind of made what the polls made look like a Democratic victory turn into a Republican victory. But in 2008 and 2012, the early polls missed in a Republican direction, showing 6 points more Republican on average at 200 days out than the final outcome. Similarly, in 2012, the same thing happened. They were biased to be more Republican. So kind of what we're seeing here is that when a Republican wins an election, the early polls were biased in favor of the Democrats. And when a Democrat wins an election, the polls were biased early in favor of the Republicans. And this has been consistent for the most recent elections. So that's just something to keep in mind as we talk about early polls, which is, again, not super useful.
But good to know.
Yeah, there you go. I guess one of the caveats is that pollsters are often surprised by election results. So the gist of, I don't know. In general, polling, particularly early polling, isn't super reliable because, like I said, there haven't been a whole lot of presidential elections and a lot of good polls to kind of study as like a population sample. And also a 1 to 2 point swing in the polls can mean a win or a loss for one party because of the Electoral College. So with all that said, let's move on to the subject of Joseph Robinette Biden. Most young voter, yeah. So one of the things that I think is important, like we all are on Twitter more than we should be for our health, which is at all. You should not be on Twitter ever for your health. And a decent chunk of our listeners are very online people as well. And if you are, it's easy to come to the belief that, like, Joe Biden has almost no support among young people and also almost no support among Sanders voters. And the data that we have does not bear that out. Currently, based on most recent polls, Biden holds a 60 to 30% lead over Trump among likely voters aged 18 to 29, which is 1 point below the lead that Bernie Sanders has. 1 to 2 points below the lead Bernie Sanders has. So that's not a huge difference between them. Sanders is more popular with young voters, but we're not see, it's not like a massive difference, right? It's like one-ish points. Now, the leads are pretty similar, even though about 50% of likely young voters view Biden unfavorably, and Sanders is viewed favorably by 58% of young voters, compared with 42% for Biden, which means a number of things. Number one, young voters do favorably view Bernie significantly more than they do Biden by about 16 points. But also a lot, it seems like most likely young voters who don't view Biden favorably are still willing to vote for him primarily because he's not, you know, Donald Trump. Right. Now, it's worth noting that in 2016, Hillary Clinton had a larger lead among young voters against Trump at this point. But it was still only about a 1%, you know, additional lead over where Biden is right now. She ended up with just a 55% to 36% advantage among young people in the election over Trump, and that did contribute to her defeat. So it is worth being concerned that the fact that Biden's even a little bit weaker at winning young voters makes him less electable, but also the difference between his kind of electability with the young is less than you'd think. And also we have to keep in mind the fucking coronavirus is going to continue to bite and hit young people particularly hard. And that may as well make more of them likely to go for Biden, just depending on kind of how they react to everything. Yeah, and I found an interesting quote in a USA Today article analyzing all this by John Delavolpe, the director of polling for Harvard. He said, quote, currently, this is of young voters picking Biden. Currently, they are giving him the benefit of the doubt. There are a lot of young people who preferred Sanders, voted for Sanders, but are willing to say in a two-person matchup they'd be with Biden right now. He cannot take that cohort for granted. And my read over his activities in the last few weeks is that he's not taking them for granted. And I don't know anything about John Delavolpe, but I don't think he's super right about that. I'd love to be proven wrong, but it sure seems like Joe Biden is doing everything he can to take Sanders voters for granted. And this is not just because of the sexual assault allegations we're going to talk about at the end. There's a number of reasons to suspect that he's going to have issues continuing to win these people over. One of them is a change that was made recently to the DNC's delegate selection rules, and this was made for 2020, and this change pushes that any candidate no longer running loses the statewide delegates they have run, and those delegates are reallocated to candidates still in the race, which will lose Bernie Sanders about a third of his delegates, which cuts his ability to force concessions from the DNC at the convention by about a third. And if Sanders doesn't get about 25% of the delegate threshold, which he would make with these delegates and won't without them, it'll be harder for him to secure concessions.
It's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, and it's not likely to convince young voters that Biden's not treating them for granted.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, one of his most recent concessions to attract them was to lower the age of Medicare to 60.
Oh, a lot of 60-year-old millennials.
Also, like Hillary's plan in 2016, that age was 55. So I don't know what Joe's trying to do there.
Yeah, I mean, you're not excited by the fact that you've only got 20 to 30 years to wait to be able to afford to go to the doctor, Cody?
Got to admit, doesn't really get me fired up to knock on doors. Sorry.
What if I were to say that's just the length between the original Star Wars series and the Star Wars prequels?
Then hello, may I interest you in Joe Biden.
Yep.
Did you guys know Joe Biden has a podcast?
I did.
Yes, we did. And
it gets about 40,000 downloads a week.
Really? Is that all?
Yeah, we get more
we get that in a day sometimes. Mm-hmm. That's so sad. Oh, Joe.
So, a lot of people trying to get
him. We got to have him on the pod. No, we don't.
Yeah, get him on the pod. Amplify that shit.
Now, I found a more detailed breakdown of the situation in the New York Times, and I'm going to quote from an article in that periodical that is very paints a very negative picture about Joe's chances. Quote, President Trump and Joe Biden began the general election campaign locked in a highly competitive contest that remains fought along the lines of the 2016 presidential election, according to national and battleground state polls. If anyone holds the early edge, it is Mr. Biden. He leads by an average of 6 points in national live interview polls of registered voters. But the election will be decided by voters in the battleground states, not registered voters nationwide. And there the story is not so clear or rosy for Mr. Biden. At the moment, a reasonable estimate is that Mr. Biden is performing 4 or 5 points worse among likely voters in the critical states than he is among registered voters nationwide. Now, the president begins the campaign with strong support from white working class, who powered his upset win 4 years ago. He leads among white voters without a college degree, 61% to 32%, in an average of live interview polls conducted since March 15th, matching or perhaps even exceeding his margin over Hillary Clinton in methodologically similar polls conducted late in the 2016 campaign. Now, there's a few things that's interesting about what the Times found and kind of their analysis of this. And everyone's analysis of these polls is different, and they're all looking at different things. This is the Times. We'll go into some other stuff later that other periodicals have kind of looked at this differently. But one thing that the Times analysis has shown is that Trump's polling has improved with working class whites who didn't go to college, which is the group that Biden explicitly ran promising he could reach. Right? Like, that was a big part of his campaign, is that these Trump voters are people that he can reach out to. And so far, there is no evidence that he has succeeded in reaching this group at all. And the fact that he campaigned on this is a huge thing, and there's no evidence he succeeded in doing it, should be a big red flag for the DNC. Now, while that may seem like Biden's been totally useless as a candidate, it's actually not quite that simple, because while he hasn't shown an ability to reach these kind of poor working class white uneducated people that Trump has improved his performing with, Biden has shown a marked ability to attract a voting population that Sanders did poorly with and that the president relied on in 2016. Quote, on average, Mr. Biden leads among voters over age 65 by a margin of 53% to 44% nationwide, including a lead in every live interview national poll reporting a result for the group. It is a substantial improvement over Ms. Clinton's 6-point deficit among the group in pre-election polls in 2016. Now, that's fascinating to me, because that means that the cohort we all kind of complain about a lot, old voters, went from backing Trump in 2016 to at least right now backing Biden by a significant margin. That's a really interesting change to me.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't want to read too much into that, but there's a number of things it could be. I wonder, these are all from recent polls, so I wonder how much of that is the coronavirus hitting.
Right. There's like, is it corona? Is there, how much of it is sexism with that age group?
Yeah. And that they just didn't like Hillary.
Right. And just like the whole, her entire political history, and them being like politically active and engaged during that time. And,
the Hillary death list, generation. Right. Such. Yeah. And and that's one of those things that might be a good sign for the Democrats in 2020. If it turns out that like old people are kind of over Trump, that's really going to hurt him. We'll see. I found that really surprising, to be honest. I didn't expect to see that with Joe. The New York Times notes, quote, Mr. Biden's early strength among older voters is not easy to explain. It cannot be fully accounted for by the change in composition of each age group, although the ascent of the baby boomers into the oldest age cohort may be part of the reason, along with the gradual departure of the more conservative silent generation from the electorate altogether. Mr. Trump seems to have made gains among voters 45 to 65, or perhaps even younger, canceling out his losses among older voters overall. Mr. Biden also holds the expected white advantage among non-white voters, although there's some evidence, actually, that that shifted a little bit in the president's direction. He also seems to do worse among Trump is doing worse among white voters, though. So it's kind of like, yeah, these numbers are kind of just shifting a little bit, and a lot of times kind of cancel each other out. And these big picture numbers are important and worth looking at to see kind of where the country's trending, but they're really only important for the election in as much as they impact how things are likely to shake out in battleground states. And Trump maintains a relative advantage in the Electoral College, but it's not unshakable. It's not like guaranteed. So he's very strong, he's shown to be pretty strong in Wisconsin, but that could shift.
Especially after this debacle.
And where it seems to be shifting is in Arizona and Florida. And this is like Florida. People talk a lot about Florida as like a Republican stronghold now, but he actually won it, beat Hillary there by a pretty narrow margin. Yeah. And I found a Newsweek article looking at kind of like Trump's performance in swing states, and it noted that two recent polls by Univision and Florida Atlantic University showed Trump ahead of Biden, but another survey by the University of North Florida showed Biden with a huge lead. An average of the recent surveys by Real Clear Politics shows Biden overhead by about 0.04 or by about 0.4%, 46.7% support compared to Trump's 46.3%. Now that points to a really competitive Florida. And it also points to like maybe a decline for Trump there, because he won Florida in 2016 with 49% of the vote, but he's polling at like 46.3 right now. And of course, Obama had won that before. Pennsylvania also seems to be significantly more competitive. Biden is ahead by 6 points there, based on an average of a couple of studies, 46% to Trump's 40%. And Trump won that state in 2016 with 48.6% of the vote. Yeah, so that's really interesting. An analysis of a number of recent Michigan polls shows Biden ahead of Trump by about 4.4 points in Michigan, which is really significant. And what's most interesting to me is that it seems like Biden is actually, there's at least some evidence, and it's not perfect evidence, but some evidence that Biden is pulling ahead in Arizona.
Wow.
Yeah. So if Biden were to flip Arizona and Pennsylvania, that makes it real hard for Trump to win, especially if Florida is actually in play. Yeah. The battleground situation, like it's one of those things. I will probably continue saying right up until the day of the election. Yeah. I don't know, fucking 50-50, yo. Like,
It's impossible to actually gauge. We've all been led astray in the past. This is constantly evolving. It is important to track it and to see what's happening. I mean, we see already... I mean, there's all these reports about the president's daily briefings throughout the coronavirus. He's been...
Not reading them because he can't read? Yeah.
That's right. No, I mean, the daily pressers he gives, he considers them as a replacement for rallies, kind of, you know, as a way to get himself out in front of people in front of the camera. But it's not helping. I mean, his approval rating right now is low. He keeps lying, doing stuff that's demonstrably false, creating more chaos. And now there's all these reports about how his advisors and his people don't want him to do them anymore.
Yeah, I guess.
We need to block him from doing them.
All that stuff, I don't know. It's such a toss-up. Because even stuff like that, it's like nothing about him or his behavior has changed like since he started trying to become the president. So like he's lying, he's doing this.
Yeah, but I think more people are pissed off about it because it directly affects them in a very real, tangible way.
Yeah, the material situations have changed.
Right, that is one.
And this is, there's another interest.
One could assume, I think, about it, but it's just like, I still go back and forth on how
effective. I'm not saying that it's something for us to get comfort in. I'm just, it's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and this brings me to another really interesting thing I found in my research. So again, if you kind of are stuck in the Twitter lefty bubble, people have talked about what a disaster it is that Biden kind of backed the fuck away for a couple of weeks as the virus really started to hit, and that this was like a major failure, a strategic error, was the Democrats ceding ground to Trump. But the latest set of polls that have come out, which are like kind of our first raft of credible polls since the coronavirus started to bite, show things looking better for Biden. His electoral position has improved as he faded into the background. And I find this really noteworthy because it does suggest, whatever you think about this morally, is a good idea, is a bad idea, it suggests it's possible, too early to say for sure, but it suggests that him backing the fuck off might have actually been an effective tactic. And if this is the case, it's because Trump has been a gigantic fuck up, but not
also
a bad thing to bet on.
Because Biden always does better when he says less.
Yeah.
His best performances on the debate stage were the ones where he barely talked.
Right.
And people say my friend continues to contend, and I agree with him. It was like, the best thing for Biden to do is shut up and go be quiet and not do any gaffes, not step on any more rakes.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons he was so successful, I think, is he's got that name recognition. He goes in the background. He's been given that advice by a lot of people too. It's like, don't speak. Just like let everybody think that you're the president guy and just
yeah.
Away, and it'll be fine. Even like cause there's also like a lot of you know there's a lot of as we've talked about before distaste for Hillary Clinton specifically. And if you look yes. at a lot of
yes.
polls,
in a way that is I think hard for most liberals and moderates to understand. I grew up with this. My parents are convinced that she has had individual political enemies murdered by gunmen. And that is a common belief. Millions of Americans share it. Like it is hard to get across the level of specific hatred to Hillary Clinton that exists.
Yeah, and if you look at like even like averages of polls during that entire election, she was ahead quite a bit often, like up by 9 points this day and so on and so forth. But if you look over time, there's a lot of fluctuation. There's a lot of crossover. She would go down during this month and then go up and then like he'd be a little better and so on. But Biden seems to be very consistently up ahead. Like yes. there's no back and forth really. It's just like, yeah, he's consistently at least higher.
Yeah, and it's not impossible that in a horrible epidemic that is going to continue to get worse, with an economic crash that is going to continue to get worse, and a president who is constitutionally incapable from shutting the fuck up, the best tactic is for the reasonable, decent candidate, or at least the candidate, you know, that's Joe's whole, like, whatever
that's
you think about
pitch,
him, that's
yeah,
what
yeah.
part what he's running on, is that he's a decent man,
yeah.
that his best tactic is to be a quiet, decent man and let Trump be a fucking asshole. And let that and it might work.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to say that's a bad strategy. And based on the current polls, it's certainly it's an arguable point. And again, this is not getting into the moral dimensions of it. It's just whether or not it works because this is politics and it's a fundamentally amoral
yeah.
business. It might
right,
work.
And so many people are. And again, this is part of his pitch. Not just that he's a decent man, but the idea that like people are tired of talking about the president. People don't want to be mm-hmm. doing this every single day and wake up
yeah.
and be worrying about that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're also comparing the constant disaster of Donald Trump to somebody who isn't even there, that's going to be an easy choice for a lot of people to make.
You know what yeah. else is an easy choice for a lot of people to make?
Wow.
To sit through these ads we're about to air.
Oh, I love them.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together.
Back from that really effortless ad break.
I know. I am.
Thank
yep.
God. I missed you guys.
I missed you all too. Listeners don't know this, but when we go out to ads, all of us as hosts are ripped into a phantom zone of pure product placement.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a nightmare of unimaginable torment, which we suffer for through all of you, for all of
yep.
you, our listeners.
Yep.
But such great deals. I mean,
amazing deals.
I mean, come on.
Amazing, amazing deals.
Yeah. So I have a little bit more to say about
yeah.
Biden and the election. The whole picture, based on just kind of all the research I put together, is not super clear. The New York Times kind of analysis shows a painfully close race with Biden and Trump neck and neck in battleground states, and Biden with a comfortable lead everywhere else. Other less rigorous periodicals like USA Today and The Hill give Biden actually a pretty sizable battleground lead, and that has been reinforced by the most recent polling in those states. Now, there are two big factors we see evidence of right now that could really change this game come Election Day. One of them is voter enthusiasm, where Trump absolutely annihilates Biden. But about 24% of Biden supporters say they're enthusiastic compared to 53% of Trump supporters, which is
that is
shocking.
And that 24% figure for Biden is the lowest on record for a Democratic candidate in 20 years of ABC Post polls.
I guess
so that's
not shocking. It's just
that's not great.
It's not
yeah.
surprising, but boy.
Yeah, it's not surprising, but it's not great. That said, the fact that only 53% of Trump supporters are enthusiastic and he is a candidate who is backed by a minority of the voting population, that also, mm-hmm. you know, you could see that as a not a negative, certainly. Now, perhaps, probably as a general rule, probably the most critical factor in all of this is the economy. And the economy was doing pretty well in numbers terms as we rolled into January 2020. and yeah, Biden in early polls led Biden by about 11 points in like voter trust of how they'd handle the economy. The economy is not doing so hot right now. So that could have a real impact if it continues to be shitting a brick
Yeah, that's what it comes down to for a lot of people, ultimately, when they get into that booth.
Yep, yep. Yeah, and it's not looking great right now. So that's another thing.
Or I guess when they get in the mailbox or whatever it's going to be.
I want to close this segment off by talking about where polls suggest Americans are landing on, like, the coronavirus shit and, like, how they feel about, you know, all these protests cropping up, stay-at-home orders. About 60% of American voters say they are more concerned that relaxing stay-at-home restrictions would cause more COVID-19 deaths than they are concerned that the restrictions will hurt the economy, which is broadly good for Democrats. Strong majorities of Democrats and independents are more worried about the coronavirus than the economy, while Republicans are divided on the question, about half of them more concerned with how the restrictions will affect the economy. And if the trend stays where it is, we're probably looking at good news for the DNC. That's a pretty big split, even among Republicans, and the fact that independents side overwhelmingly with Dems on this could move the needle in a big way, especially if we see Republican-dominated states end early, lockdowns early, and that leads to a corresponding wave of new deaths. And there's some evidence that that's already starting to happen. This is the kind of thing, if it goes badly enough for the Republicans, that could flip the Senate along with the presidency, which feels like a gross thing to say when we're talking about potentially tens of thousands of lives. But this is the soulless, gross political discussion moment for us. So we're just going to talk about that. One particular stat I find really interesting is that the percentage of voters who say they're worried a family member might catch the coronavirus has increased by 20 points over the last month.
Yeah.
So that, again, this all kind of tracks well to at least where the Democrats are standing right now. Another thing that's probably worth noting is that since mid-March, the share of voters who say Trump is the most to blame for the spread of coronavirus grew by 11 points, while net approval of his handling of the outbreak fell by 12 points. And that's by a morning consult poll. So things aren't trending in a good direction for the president. All of this comes with the caveat that anything could happen at any point in this election.
Yeah, it's not May yet.
Yeah, it's not even May yet. Aliens could land on the White House lawn and Trump could fist fight their leader into submission. And that could have an effect on the election. Who the fuck knows?
He loves everybody. You saw that clip?
Every time I realize how long we have before the election, my stomach drops. It's just the amount of twists and turns between now and then are just... You know, there's so many things that can and will happen.
Yeah, he's not even like officially like the nominee. Like the convention hasn't even happened. It's
We are so early in this fucking process.
But this is all incredibly important to know and to be aware of as we're wading through all of it.
So, yeah, that carries me through my segment on let's look at the numbers and not think about morality for a second. Cody, do you want to bring us back to basic human morality?
No. Okay.
Do it!
So we've already talked about Tara Reid before on this podcast, the allegations. You can check out a podcast that is the name of this podcast that you're listening to for more on that. Tara was one of the women who originally came forward back in the day, 90 years ago, about Joe Biden's, let's call it a handsy approach to dealing with women. The handsiness, the grabby Joe stuff, the hair sniffing, that kind of
sticky fingers.
Joe. It's from all that ice cream. That's the problem.
Oh, I hate it when you call it sticky fingers.
Oh, that's, no. Yeah, oh, especially considering we're going to talk about.
Yeah, no.
Well, I will not apologize.
You shouldn't. You get to say that, but Cody and I have to express
with sounds
at that.
Horror expressed.
Yeah.
So she was part of that group back in the day, counted as a credible accusation. Though Biden, we should note, did, and these are some really heavy air quotes, apologize for this behavior. Let's listen to his apology real quick.
Sorry, I invaded your space. I mean, I'm sorry this happened.
Yeah. Now, first, real quick. So he with a shrug, he says, sorry, I invaded your space. Okay, very cool about the hair sniffing and grabbing.
You know, it's interesting that he says that because when I was at the Buddha bar in Kiev and I accidentally vomited into a table full of drinks that a family was having, I said the same thing, which was that I'm sorry that happened, because I was sorry that happened, but I still do not take responsibility. We have no way of knowing, you know, why the vomit wound up.
Yeah,
on
no,
the
it's
drinks.
A thing that happened, and you're sorry that it happened. Yeah, it's
exactly,
an interesting phrase.
Exactly.
Like, I'm sorry that this happened.
Yeah, like the time I was throwing bottles onto the roofs of houses in Ljubljana because I was really drunk at 2 a.m. and one of them hit a window. Like, I'm sorry that happened. I wish it hadn't happened, but there's nothing I can do now to make it unhappen. So why are we
exactly.
still talking
and who knows
about
if
it?
There was even anything you did to make it happen. It's just a thing that happened.
Yeah. Correlation does not equal causation.
Damn
is there
right.
more to, is there more to Joe's
there's,
apology?
There are 10 more seconds.
But I'm not sorry in the sense that I think I did anything that was intentionally designed to do anything wrong or be inappropriate.
So that's...
yes, the classic sorry, not sorry.
Sorry this happened. I'm not sorry in the sense that do anything intentionally wrong. Anyway, I don't know. If you heard that apology and you're like, good job. That's fine. We don't need to overanalyze it, but nice try, Joe, I guess is my point.
Yeah.
So anyway, that happened again 90 years ago.
It sure did.
And we all seem to sort of forget about it and continue on.
Yeah, like that Ukrainian family
exactly.
forgot. Yes.
Now, but since then, Tarek came forward with more details about what happened to her. Basically, the reaction to this was largely non-existent. People who weren't ignoring it were calling it a smear job, a ploy by bitter Bernie bros. They accused her of being a Russian op of some kind due to a public Medium post. So great job over there at the Kremlin on your ops.
Ugh.
Some people were contacted. There was some extra reporting on it. Some people corroborated certain details. Others denied that it happened. Some people remembered her being removed from being in charge of the interns and then let go. One thing that Tara did mention also was that after it happened, her mother called into Larry King Live and to talk about this. And about a week ago, that clip surfaced, or a clip surfaced of what seems to be that happening. So a woman calls Larry King and talks about an issue that her daughter was having with her boss's behavior and whether or not they weren't sure like what to do about it, how to hold that person accountable. They weren't sure if they were to go to the press.
I believe they specifically said, you know, she works for...
Yeah.
Someone in the Senate. Yeah. And how do we deal with a situation like this? Also, what was interesting about that is that the caller was calling from, I don't have it in front of me, the same place where Tara's mom owned a house. It seems like it's her. Person.
It would be very weird for... her to have mentioned this call and for this call to a similar call to exist and it to not be her.
Yeah. I think this is very clearly Tara's mom calling in. It seems too direct to be doubted. But I also think the fact that like a lot of people might have called in complaining about senators sexually harassing their daughters, that part I don't have trouble believing. Like,
yeah.
there could be a few of those.
It doesn't seem like a common comment.
But yes, this is very consistent with what she said before the video was found. It's consistent with her story. Yeah.
And so at least this detail seems to be accurate. The call itself is a little vague. It doesn't describe the event that we've heard described. One thing I've seen people point out is like, well, actually, like one thing she mentions that her daughter still expressed like respect to her boss in the call.
Yes, as Tara did before the call was public. Stated specifically that's why she didn't want to say anything.
And I guess this, and we don't need to go down the laundry list of all the things that people have been saying about this, but it's another very similar thing we heard during the Kavanaugh Ford stuff. Why didn't she come forward? Why is she expressing this respect still? I don't know, like, women were still in Harvey Weinstein's movies. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Are we doubting the Weinstein stuff?
I don't think it's too hard to wrap our minds around why somebody would continue to have respect, or at least publicly have respect for somebody, or wouldn't have come forward with all the information, all of the different things that people,
especially like
that, survivors of sexual
culturally
assault.
Like, society's different even about this specific kind of thing. She obviously like adored him and respected him before when she wanted to work for him. So I don't know. It's just this, just an example of the kind of dismissive reaction to this that we've seen in other scenarios where those same people doing it now were like, don't do that to those other people. But anyway, a bit after that video, Business Insider published a piece by Rich McHugh, Ronan Farrow's old producer. The piece focuses on two women, both corroborating various levels of details of Tara's story. One, a lot of details of it. One of them was a former colleague of Tara's, Lorraine Sanchez, worked with Reed in the office of a California state senator in the mid-90s. She told Insider that she recalls Reed complaining at the time that her former boss in Washington, D.C. had sexually harassed her and that she had been fired after raising concerns. Lorraine remembers this happening. She told Tara, like, don't worry, that kind of thing won't happen to you here at this new job. And the other woman that is in the piece, I think, is obviously the more compelling. It corroborates way more. And her name is Linda Lacasse. She remembers, well, first of all, if it matters to you, she is a Biden supporter. Like, if that is a concern of yours in these kinds of allegations.
Not a concern of mine, but it might be a concern of somebody's. So
she is a Joe Biden supporter. And she actually still plans on voting for him, but still felt compelled to come forward. So she recalls basically,
Jesus.
She recalls she would smoke cigarettes with Tara. She's her neighbor. Their daughters would swim in the pool and they would just have these conversations at night. And at one point, violent men were brought up. Quote, we were talking about violent stories because I had a violent situation. We just started talking about things and she just told me about the senator that she had worked for and he put his hand up her skirt. I'm going to read just a little more of Linda recalling what she was told by Reed in about 1995, 1996. I remember her saying, here was this person that she was working for and she idolized him. And he kind of put her up against a wall and he put his hand up her skirt and he put his fingers inside her. She felt like she was assaulted and she really didn't feel there was anything she could do. She was crying. She was upset. And the more she talked about it, the more she started crying. I remember saying that she needed to file a police report. Lacasse said she does not recall whether Reed supplied any other details, like the location of the alleged assault or anything Biden may have said. I don't remember all the details. I remember the skirt. I remember the fingers. I remember she was devastated. So this is, the gist of her recollection.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yep. Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds,
I think, this is all, again, this corroborates quite a bit here. A lot of the details that people have been saying, like, well, why did she change her story now that this and this and this? Well, this is a thing people have said about many other situations like this. There are a lot of reasons people don't come forward with specific details like this and then wind up doing that. One interesting thing I think about this is that the reaction originally to this accusation that we've covered on the other episode, that reaction is what made this woman come forward about having heard this story. Again, she's a Biden supporter. She plans on voting for him, but wanted to come forward. She said, you know, this happened, and I know it did because I remember talking about it. And from the piece, after seeing how political operatives and news organizations responded to the claim, the Biden camp denied it outright, and critics scoured Reed's social media accounts for evidence of a purported affinity for Vladimir Putin, Lacasse said she decided to come forward. And I'm not going to get into, like, specific people or publications or podcasts or whatever who were sort of a part of that ecosystem, ignoring it, denying it, and trying to smear her. But I do find it interesting that that's what did this. The people who have been putting their heads in the sand about this or trying to discredit her are the reason that this woman came forward to corroborate it more than anyone has. And it's the kind of things that, you know, you've seen these articles, even this recent one, which isn't what caused her to come forward, but I think it's a good example of this kind of thing. The Washington Post published a piece recently, yesterday, titled "The Developments in Allegations Against Biden Amplify Efforts to Question His Behavior." Really, really, I know. Sorry, it's a very funny headline. They're doing their best. But that headline has been changed, and now it reads, "Trump allies highlight new claims regarding allegations against Biden."
Oh.
It is this kind of stuff that is disgusting, that is making people even more furious about it, and it's making people come forward to point it out.
Yeah.
Even any mention of this case, you're asked, do you love Donald Trump, don't you? And that's not what we're talking about.
Awesome.
There is zero consistency with how people have dealt with this allegation. And it's very transparent. It's very obvious why. I don't know how long this can be sustained. He hasn't been asked about it. No one wants to talk about
it. How long
it.
What can be sustained?
Just this ignoring it.
I mean, to be honest.
Right on up till the election, apparently. Baby.
Yeah, it might work out just fine. Like for the Biden campaign. Yeah, like it might make, no matter how many more people come forward, it may have no impact on the election whatsoever. That's just an ugly reality.
The depressing, I don't know that it will. We've already we've elected tons of rapists and sexual assaulters.
Yeah.
Perhaps 100% of our presidents, perhaps. But I just don't see it moving the needle, which is a completely depressing reality. I mean, I resent like hell that we're in this situation.
It's not pleasant to be in a situation where people are honestly saying, I prefer that the competent rapist respond to pandemics and have the power to end all human life with nuclear weapons, as opposed to the incompetent rapist. Like, that's
And I don't love that all of these powerful women that we may not like them, but, you know, the politics of the people that might be Biden's VP pick.
That's
makes me sick that they have to swallow that, whomever they are. And they do.
Well, right, you know, they do, like,
they have to figure out how to, they have to come to terms with this,
And at least address this, it, because, and otherwise, I don't know, like, how credible any of these people can be seen as. Like, that's one of the, I think this particular case is really disgusting that we're in. But in general, there's this sense, I think, of that, where, like, we're not even able to bring anything up anymore without it being like this ugly, ugly discussion. And like, you like Trump and you're like, you like this rapist, you do this. And it's like, how can we function? Shouldn't everybody at least be able to say, he's nobody's first choice, and he's bad for this reason, this is bad, he should be doing this better, it would be nice if he did this. And this is an allegation that's real, and it sucks. It sucks that we're in this situation.
Cody, what you're expressing frustration with is the real purpose of the Russian disinformation efforts. More than anything, it's to make us all feel like it's to make honest discourse impossible. Like, that's the goal. It's to crater the nation by making it impossible for us to even fucking talk about this shit.
Honestly, Russia doesn't have to do any disinformation anymore. We just are all accusing each other of being agents and shit.
Yeah, you could make a case that no amount of additional disinformation could do functionally more damage than has already been done by the fact that the reality of the disinformation is now in everybody's head. It's cool.
Oh. Oh, it's cool. Good.
Yeah.
I see.
It's cool. Yeah, that's yeah, it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically. No. It is impossible.
Like Joe Biden eating a drippy ice cream cone.
Yeah. I mean, the uplifting part is that outside of, you know, the fact that Joe Biden's a bad person, the president's coalition seems to be weaker than some people are getting him credit for, and that's a good thing if it remains true throughout
the
election.
At the very least, it's not nothing.
That is something
for us right now today to take comfort in.
Yep. The right rapist may win.
Yeah, you can go. You want to pick me up. Check out today. Hillary Clinton surprise guest for Joe Biden's virtual town hall. Talking about women who have lost their jobs through no fault of their own. That's a direct quote from Joe Biden today.
God damn it!
Talking about women in abusive situations. It's all good. I ruined it by bringing it down again. I'm sorry.
Well,
I've got something positive.
Yeah,
if you guys
please.
Like what we do, yeah. You can check us out online at Worst Year Pod on Instagram and Twitter.
On the bright side, plugs.
I would recommend avoiding Twitter, but if you're on Twitter, check us out.
I have something positive, too. Earlier today, the episodes that we plug this in specifically haven't dropped of Behind the Bastards, but I posted a link on my Twitter to a GoFundMe for a charity in Portland that is raising money to buy the Portland Diaper Bank, which supplies free diapers to poor people who cannot afford diapers. And we've raised about $3,000 just off of the tweet.
That's amazing.
$2,500. So if you go to COVID-19 response and diaper need on GoFundMe, just type that in. You will be taken to the page COVID-19 response and diaper need. Or if you find my pinned tweet on Twitter at IWriteOK, you can donate and help people who can't afford diapers for their babies afford diapers for their babies. And that will make things slightly less awful than they were before those women had diapers for their babies.
I love that, Robert. Good job.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.